Hey guys, and welcome to a special edition of Interactive Distractions. I am here with Glenn Burgess.
What's up, people?
Hey, and if any of you guys follow gaming news or whatnot, it's hard to go to any kind of site or media outlet without seeing some kind of information or a little bit of controversy about an indie game maker who made a game about his job and ended up getting fired for making said game. So, especially if you live in Toronto, you can't even...
Yeah, anywhere
radio.
Anywhere in the Canadias, and it's fairly peppered through the U.S. too.
Yeah, it's kind of everywhere. I woke up today to hear our guest's name. That's the first thing I heard today was our guest today's name because I had my alarm set to the radio.
What? And it wasn't because Tanya was screaming it? It wasn't?
No, and it wasn't okay. Because of that. No. But our guest today is a friend of the show, is also a regular member for Retroids, formerly VG Evo, and that is David S. Gallant. How you doing, Dave?
Thank you for getting the name right.
Can I ask, how do you get it wrong?
You should Gallant, really maybe? Ask. No, a lot of people do say Gallant. There's actually a lot of people from the East Coast who say Gallant. And I don't know, for some reason my family is just Gallant. It sounds cooler, doesn't
that's
it?
That's stupid. Yeah, it you should make a video game about them and how dumb they are. You have two choices. Say my name right or say my name wrong. Oh, you said it wrong. You're dumb. Game's over.
There you go. Press X to say my name right.
I love it. I would play the hell out of that game.
But yeah, Zavari, known to people on in the Retroids universe.
Retroids. And right. And prior Twitter conversations of probably, what, 2 years ago at this point?
Yeah, yeah. He changed his name about 30 times probably in the last, like...
Yeah, once was actually a bet for a previous podcast of mine.
Nice.
He was Kid Masturbata for a little while there.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's bring that one back into the media spotlight.
Oh, we really need to.
All right, Dave. Well, you've been on this show a few times now, and why don't you... You've been going through a little bit of a roller coaster ride, I'd say, over the last, like, 48 hours. I guess now been, like, yeah, a little bit more than that. But you made this game.
Well, yep.
You made this game. You first of all, you got into indie game development basically on your own. You're self-taught, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I don't have a computer science background. I never went to school for programming. I kind of discovered that Toronto has this really vibrant game development community. And it was basically one of those moments where you find the club of all the cool kids and you want to be one of them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And also just turns out that programming is something that I really like to do, and I like to make games. So I'm going with it. And, you know, I've discovered that's what I want to do with the rest of my life. You know, I'm almost 30 years old, and I didn't really have a career path, and now I think I do.
Good, because the job you had before that, you weren't.
Yeah, exactly. what was your unfortunate almost career path, I guess, would be? Because that's... There's a good amount of controversy surrounding this, which is either warranted or unwarranted. I mean, you're kind of on one side of the fence or the other, you know, as far as how much controversy there really should be. But I guess we should probably get the cut through the
details out of the way.
Thickness in the room. Yeah.
He made a game called I Get This Call Every Day. And
which I already sympathize with.
I like, totally
do. Before anything else
I've
happens.
I've been there. Glenn's been there.
I kind of am now almost.
The what?
I kind of almost am now, yeah.
Am I still there? No, God, no. I haven't worked at a call center for about
you don't, because you, well, but you don't deal directly with customers,
that's a relief,
do you, Jeff?
Man.
I'm not at a call center, though.
But do you deal directly with customers?
No, I deal with the lawyers.
You lucky bastard. I still deal directly
with professionals.
I get direct calls from customers still, so I still somewhat deal with it. I still sympathize.
I did work in a call center that was directly with customers, and I can't say too much because it's kind of the same employer, but yeah, I can definitely sympathize with what Dave was going through. But you made this game called I get this call every day. Basically doing a pretty, it was a humorous, but
it kind of loosely referenced, yeah,
it was a call center simulator for the most part of that call that everybody does get every day. And
so what were you doing, if you want to kind of elaborate for what was your job from day to day?
It's kind of funny, you know, I'm here now.
Anticlimactic saying was.
You kind of given it away. But yeah, I mean, if you'd asked me 48 hours ago, I wouldn't be able to tell you. But now that I am no longer employed by them, I was an agent with the Canada Revenue Agency. I'd actually, I was entering my fourth year there. It had been my job for quite some time, one of the longest jobs I've ever been able to hold down. So that's where I was working. And then while, you know, I've worked in other call centers as well, you know, I get this call every day. It was inspired by that job, but also just by, you know, all my call center experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are elements that are definitely heavily based on that most recent one. I mean, I think if you play I Get This Call Every Day, nothing's spelled out for you, but, you know, it definitely seems like you're playing as an agent, possibly in a government call center. You know, you're using social insurance numbers, you're asking for information from previous tax returns. So, I mean, there are ways to sort of, you know, sort of, I guess, link it.
You could Sherlock it. You could really trace it back.
You could Sherlock it, yeah.
Okay.
And that's essentially what a particular reporter in the Toronto Star did.
Okay.
So my day it went like this. On Monday, say I just come off of the Global Game Jam, where me and two other guys had made this multiplayer racing game called Hemo Racers. And I Get This Call Every Day was kind of out of my mind. You know, I'd been getting ready to sort of move on from it and work on something else. And I get this phone call from the Toronto Star. Not only a phone call, but also an email and a tweet directing me to this one reporter. And, you know, when someone tries to get a hold of you that much from traditional media, you kind of take notice. And so it culminated in a phone interview that I did on my lunch break during, you know, like I wasn't on site at work. Like I was, you know, off site. This is my private time, essentially. I'm not being paid to be on my lunch. And, you know, told her about the game, and you know, she had correctly assumed who I worked for, and so she told me that the interview was you know, the article was going to run the next day, and lo and behold, it literally became front page news, but under the spin of, you know, hey, do you hate the tax man? Well, the tax man kind of hates you too, and he made this game about it.
That's the way it kind of.
It's a pretty big skew, yeah. Oh, it really did. I mean, it really did demean Canada Revenue Agency in that way, like basically presenting the whole situation as, you know, I made a game that both makes CRA look bad and also makes the taxpayers look bad. And unfortunately, at that point, like, I can't tell you what happened after that. But I can tell you that at the end of Tuesday, January 29th, I was no longer employed by Canada Revenue Agency.
Yeah.
Boo.
Go ahead.
And that's where the story just starts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, realistically.
Yeah. It's come around. It's like, that's the thing that bothers me is, yeah, in your game, it's one phone call with one person. It's not like you were to say, hey, this is what every call is like. And we all agreed, like when I worked in call center before, Glenn, you're going to get people like that. It's just the way, it's the nature of the business, so to speak. And it's like humanity. And you even, and the way you pretend to even like playing the game, it's a younger person. And I could have been that person when I was like younger. If I was like, you know, like 17, 18 years old, I have no idea what I'd be like calling to change my address. I probably would have had someone like, oh, what's your current address? I probably would have given them my current address and not the address of like my previous one or something like that. But
yeah, and I wasn't even trying to say that there was anything bad with that. I mean, I think the character that I created, there's still ways that people can empathize with them. I wasn't trying to make them look like a total idiot.
Right.
And I'll be honest, like most of the calls that I got, I was dealing with people who, you know, knew what they were doing, who were, you know, even if they didn't necessarily have all their information prepared, you know, there's still ways to get to the root of the matter and to help people. And,
well, and even in the title of the game itself, it's I Get This Call Every Day, not every call I get is this. Yeah,
that's exactly what my point was. I was empathizing, saying like when I was that young, the person you're talking to, the character in the game, is a younger person. It's a younger person calling in to try to change his address.
Or a ridiculously old person who's set in their ways and really doesn't understand why they need to do this bullshit to curtail what you need them to do. And you're like, I don't even make the rules, dude. Just do it.
I can't wait till like the year 2200, when the fact that the caller's year of birth is 1991 becomes something so quaint.
Yeah.
They definitely will be considered young by that point.
My great-grandfather fought in the war of 2018-12.
So, So this whole thing happened. So I'm probably just shocked. Like, I found out, actually, my girlfriend sent me the link to the Star article and an email. I was like, oh, shit. But what's happened? What has been the last 48 hours? What's that been like? Because we all are followers of each other on Twitter and stuff. We see all the positive stuff that's come out of it. Very, very little negative stuff that I've seen. Mostly positive, especially by the gaming community itself, especially by the indie gaming community in Toronto, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mainly.
Well, if anything, it's a kick in the ass, you know, like to kind of... I don't know. It's hard to say, but you know, in a way, like having a job like that, you know, you're not necessarily happy or unhappy with, you're just stagnant and it's income and you're getting it and you're not going to quit that job, you know, but like getting fired from that job and getting the positive response you're getting is kind of that, like, you know, it's like lighting a fire a little bit of, you know, I can do this thing I want to do. Right. You know,
well, the way I look at it, it tell me if I'm wrong, Dave, but I watched your interview today on CBC News. It's Canadian Broadcasting. So they did a news thing with Dave today. They interviewed him. And one of the actual questions was, well, if you weren't really happy with your job, why didn't you quit? And Dave replied with, well, I've kind of asked my question that every day. And it really comes down to is bills to pay, stuff like that. Like, you don't want to just go ahead.
Absolutely.
And quit. Like, your indie stuff you're doing right now is a hobby. You're not getting paid for it, except for the game that you're selling, which we're going to get to shortly.
Exactly. The sad thing is I actually answered that question for them. I kind of wish they'd used my answer instead of just a shot of me laughing.
That's what I figured.
so let me take you through just sort of like my mindset and what's happened for the past 48 hours, starting with just leaving that office. When it came down, part of me wasn't really expecting it to go that bad. And, you know, when it became a termination, I was immediately filled with a huge sense of worry. You know, suddenly, you know, I didn't know whether we were going to be able to, you know, I knew we were okay for at least February, but what's going to happen in March? You know, am I going to have enough money to pay rent, to pay for food? Am I going to have to move back in with my mom? You know, you know, what's going to happen to my three cats that I have to feed? You know, we're trying to have kids, or is that even going to be a possibility? And like, I felt like I'd really let down my mom and my wife and everyone around me by letting all this happen. And then on some point on my commute home, I felt, you know, it's probably time to let everybody know. Everyone's sort of heard the controversy. Everyone sort of knows that I was being looked at and might even be worried, might be wondering what the situation is. And I know one of the things I can at least say is, yes, I can confirm my employment status is terminated. And so I did. And then it just became this massive snowball rolling down the hill.
Now, before we get to what happens right after that, when you made this game, did you think of those repercussions? Did you think that at all your job would be at risk? Or did you just figure... Because, I mean, realistically, I don't even know if you can answer this question, so I'm just going to go ahead and assume, just by basing everything, if Toronto Star doesn't post that article, if word didn't get to them, you still have your job right now.
You know, I think the possibility still existed that there could have been something else. I mean, maybe someone
within... Well, I mean,
like,
at this time right now. Like, I mean, like, that was the catalyst that started the whole thing. Of,
sure.
Like, you're right, as of, like, now, your employers wouldn't have known... if it wasn't for that article.
No, I think that's probably correct. I mean, no one really, none of my coworkers really knew about the game. You know, I hadn't really aggressively promoted it at work. I made it no secret that I was a game developer. I handed out business cards that went to my website. You know, many of my coworkers, if they'd actually gone to my website, probably could have discovered the game, and maybe one of them would have, you know, tipped managers off to some of that.
Yeah.
And like, in my mind, when I released it, I knew that this was a possibility, you know, like,
as remote as it might be, you have to understand, you know, that
exactly.
Absolutely, and is going to be a possibility. Sure.
So part of me, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this is the hipster in me talking, but like, I didn't want to give the agency a chance to stand between me and my art. You know, I didn't want to have to meekly submit the game to them for their approval to see if they found it acceptable.
I think that's just being normal.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
No, I wouldn't have done that either if I.
So, and you know, some people have brought up whether this is, you know, a matter of freedom of expression. You know, obviously, you know, it comes down to between the agreement that I had with my employer, but there's probably larger issues of, you know, suppressing dissenting opinions. And I'm, so far I've kind of stayed out of the larger, bigger picture issues for now. I mean, whether I get into them later, we'll have to see. But, you know, I knew that this could happen. I still probably didn't actually believe that it would. And it certainly did surprise me when it did happen. And I wasn't prepared for it, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. That would have been weird. What the hell? Why is everyone trying to contact me? What's going on? Sweet, this is awesome. People are really interested in my game. And it turns out the media likely didn't play the game. I don't know if you got to ask any members of the Star or CBC if they actually played your game or not, but I would assume not. Especially not the Star after the first time they published it. But
there's one of the sort of granddaddies of the Toronto indie gaming scene, Jim McGinley. He has been infuriated by the entire situation, and one of the things he's been doing is keeping a running log of all of the changes and modifications the Toronto Star has done to their articles, both on the online and print versions.
Oh, wow.
And one of the recent modifications that the Star reporter has put in is indicating that she has played the game. I don't know at what point through all of this she played the game. I don't know if it was something that she did before she published the first draft of her article. I don't know if she did. The worst suspicion that I have is that when the Minister of Revenue, Gail Shea, commented on the game saying that she found it offensive, I suspect she hadn't played the game.
Oh, absolutely. I would go further than suspect, and I would say it is an absolute guarantee that she never played the game.
Yeah, it's a very high percentage of assumption, that's for sure.
It's more likely than not that it never happened.
Well, like above all concerns for the agency, like just to call it offensive without having ever experienced it, that bothers me, you know?
As it should.
Well, because she probably took it at face value what the Star said. And I mean, the title that the Star had for that first article was very, very misleading. Basically, I don't verbatim, but it was basically saying that you were making fun of taxpayers how it went. And I'm sure that's how it was portrayed, and that's how it was like communicated with the higher ups there at that Canada Revenue. But
It's the better story when every single call that comes in, the taxpayer is like the jackass IT guy from SNL going move. Like that's,
yeah, exactly.
And that's not the case. That's not even what the game is trying to portray. It's trying to vent the minority of the calls, which frustrate you.
And that's the transition comes to is then this went kind of viral, so to speak, and snowballed before we went on that little bit of a related tangent. Then this is what happened after this. All this went public. David, take us through the stuff. Like what happened? So you know, you're down to the point. You pass the point where you're like, okay, who's hiring or anyone hiring? You tweet that. People asking you what's going on. I know you can't be specific. People can get the gist of it, and then people that are smart enough to put two and two together and not the ones who are, you know, given your game shit for making fun of taxpayers, which is not the case. But anyway, so what happens? What happens at this point when you started thinking, oh shit, this actually might be a good thing for me?
Well, it's I don't know when it really sunk in that it might be a good thing. I mean, it really took till I got home for everything to sort of coalesce. You know, when I was on the train, I didn't really get an opportunity to really see the fall through. There were tweets of support. There were, you know, people, you know, some of them were even speculating, you know, this guy just may have gotten fired for his game. And those tweets started coming around. So it started by just people, tweeting about my situation and linking to the game. And so sales started just going up. And keep in mind, sales had really trailed off by this time.
The game's been out for 2 months now?
Well, let's go with this. Before any of this started, what was your total revenue on that game?
Total,
if you don't mind
revenue.
Yeah, because you had tweeted it before. I remember seeing it. So I just, you know, for the listeners' edification, what was that?
It's an estimation, but it was at the time $1,300, and that's accounting for all fees and transactions and whatnot.
that's your take home. That's like basically what you made off of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
So the tweets start coming, then the articles start coming. Kotaku, who had covered the game when it first came out, do a follow-up piece. Other places do follow-ups. The original reporter keeps trying to get a hold of me to do a follow-up, and at this point I am no comment with this person. And then the interview requests start coming in, and the sales keep going, and the game gets retweeted and promoted by the likes of Raimi from Vlambeer and Mole Industria and Chris Remo from Telltale. The people who I admire who
that
make
got
the
you
games,
into this business in the first place or got exactly, you know, yeah.
And not just from the local scene, like I don't know Chris Remo. I've never exchanged a word with him. I've listened to Idle Thumbs and played. Unfortunately, I haven't played all the way through The Walking Dead yet. But, oh, to hear people like that, like promoting my situation and urging people to support me, like I think I cried more than once. Absolutely, just the amount of support that I was getting was just overwhelming. And sales just kept going, and they haven't stopped.
I know there's a joke in here somewhere for being like, are you going to claim your taxes for this? But
No, of course.
I mean, it out in my brain.
So before any of this started, the total revenue was around $1,300. If you were to just take the last 2-3 days that this whole whirlwind's been going on, what's that been at about?
It's and here's the kicker is that even the number that I have today is still behind. I'd say probably about 8 to 10 hours, maybe. To date, the game has made over $5,000.
Holy shit.
Nice. Very good.
Wow.
And this is a game, to let people look at all this. You're asking for a $2 donation minimum, from your website, davidescalante.com. And you can basically donate anything you want. So, obviously people are really feeling your situation and being like, you know what, sticking up for you. And they're probably, I'd say more so than not, they're probably going above the $2 minimum, which
right.
That says a lot, I think, about
it. Absolutely. How this, I mean,
I it's like I said, like people. I think a lot of people, even too, who looked at it differently. People who don't play the games, like okay, they're just taking what this article said at face value and not playing it. But I think when people actually do, they realize it's not harmful in any way. If anything, you're making fun of yourself, I found. It's like you make some, you know, self-deprecating comments in the thing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was hilarious. And I think that it's great. Well, I'll let you go on. Like, sorry, I'm like totally like rambling right now.
But that's okay.
It's just weird. I've been monitoring this since like yesterday morning or whatever. I'm just like, this is crazy how there's kind of like, you could do like a graph of like positive and negative and the reaction to everybody, and it would just be all over the fucking place for like the first like 8 hours, and I think it probably levels off at somewhere where it's like, what the fuck's wrong with people these days? They have no sense of humor. And, like, getting out of the hole whether or not it was right for them to lay you off or not or anything like that, it's just, it's crazy. It's nuts.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's still negative reactions here and there. I mean, the thing is that the story is in so many different places, and so many websites attract such different audiences with different opinions. You know, I've had, you know, comments on, CBC that, you know, like, well, I guess this guy's, you know, I hope his parents are happy that he's going to be living in the basement till he's 50.
Yeah. Because if you lose one job, you're damned for the rest of your life.
That's you lost a job. Exactly. You're going to be living with your parents forever. That totally is how that works.
And even from the same site before the news broke that I actually lost the job, there was a great one of, you know, oh, he won't get fired. The relative that got him the job in the first place will never let that happen.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. I will say though, being not working for the Canadian government, that is what people think. It's like if you get into if you do get into the government, you got in because you knew somebody. And
you know, no secret. I can tell you how I got a job at Canada Revenue Agency. I applied.
Yeah. No, I know. You know? I know. You're like That's what I'm saying.
You know, that's, but that actually is how it is at the local government level here in Pennsylvania, that literally there's a serious nepotism problem.
Yeah, like, and where, it is kind of here too, but I know that you did, so because it's not the first time you worked. Well, I don't want to go into much of like what your history is, but like everyone I know who does work for the government did know somebody at some point. And it might not have been a direct relative, but they've known somebody. And I guess that's, and I can say where I work, it's the exact same thing.
Well, yeah, that's like that anywhere. They always tell you it's not what you know, it's who you know, and that's how you get the job.
Who you know. Yeah.
Sure.
But, yeah, but again, I've seen some, yeah, like, negative stuff, positive stuff, but, I mean, I've seen people, I can understand the whole idea of them letting you, it's the reasoning behind it, which, again, we won't get into, but I've seen people get laid off and fired from their job for less. And that's, it's not, don't take that as like a insult or anything like that. Like, I had somebody, I can speak about this now because this company doesn't even fucking exist anymore, but a friend of mine used to work for Pseudo Interactive. So, they're the guys who made, like, Full Auto 1, 2, and those games. And at a, someone was leaving the company, and they were sending around the card to sign, and he wrote in the card, oh, thank fucking God you're getting out of this, this terrible establishment that treat you like shit or whatever. Good luck onto, like, bigger and better things. And of course.
Oh, they fired him for that?
Yeah, they fired him for that. So, his manager or whatever got a hold of that card and was reading it. Said, hey, let me read what people put in your comments, and, he got canned for that. So. But they don't exist anymore, so I am hopefully not getting in trouble for that, and they won't know who he is anyway. But anyway, but yeah, so that's just the way it is. And I had a point there.
Well, I mean, when it comes down to it, companies and the public service specifically, I think sometimes have a real perception problem. They want to avoid any possibility of being seen as negative, even when the truth is negative. Mm-hmm. You know, I would hope that, you know, someone in a position in the government would be able to look at, I get this call every day, and recognize fundamental problems. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, use it as a catalyst for change. I'd like to hope that I'm exposing some of the difficulties agents and callers have to go through because of things that the agency has control over.
Mm-hmm.
It's a missed opportunity.
And if your call center is like mine, I'm guessing you have time breaks, timed lunch. Every call is recorded. They can see what you're pulling up on your computer screen at all times.
Yeah.
Well, they're recorded, not so much. I mean, there is actual security concerns with that one, considering the wealth of confidential information you're pulling up on a call. So,
yeah, I suppose
live monitoring is a possibility.
What's your social security number? Oh, it's this. Are you recording this, by the way, so that, you know, anybody could access it later on? That'd be
slow. No, it's a recording. I work for a bank, so like all the same stuff is confidentiality stuff, but it's all recorded within the bank. So they all know, like, the people who are doing that stuff. I mean,
people get paranoid when the government does it, though. It's fine when a private company does it, but
I mean, I had a lot of callers who just assumed, as a matter of course, that we record our calls.
That's what I would usually figure, yeah.
And I clarified, no, we actually don't. You know, even the little IVR says, you're calling me monitored.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most people just throw in the word recorded to that as well. I worked in a job, different call center, where the recording system actually got cross-wired with the internal phones. And I was a manager at this call center who was, of course, supposed to review my agent's recordings and instead got to hear such wonderful things as the two HR girls discussing the police officers who had just come in to advise us of an employee who was found dead.
Oh, God.
Whoa.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And the thing is like, this was... not one of my agents, but he had been trained in my class. Like, I considered him a friend, and that whole incident had happened like months ago, and this recording had popped up just afterwards. It was surreal and tragic, but just, you know, these systems aren't always perfect either. You know, like,
No, of course not.
Sure.
The recording systems can go just as wrong, and that could lead to a breach in security. So I'm kind of glad that the agency doesn't record calls.
Yeah, definitely a good thing. All right, well, without going too much longer into the whole thing that's going down, what's, as you stand right now, what's your whole outlook on what happened, or what do you think, what are you hoping to come out of, not even come out of this, but what are you looking forward to? What's your next year plan, your 12-month plan? What's going on?
I mean, everything's still in pretty big flux. There, at least on February 10th in Toronto, there's an event happening called the David Gallant Sessions, which is a benefit concert to help raise funds to help make me make the transition to becoming a full-time game developer. I've had no hand in this. This is being organized by the community in Toronto.
As I understand, are tickets like on pre-sale for that or anything right now?
It looks like it's just $5 at the door. So no pre-sale tickets.
As you go to this, what is that access to? Like, it doesn't have to be necessarily for any developers, right? Can you go there as like a local schlub like me and just be like, hey,
I understand it, it's going to be open to the public. I'm pretty sure. I mean, the event's on Facebook. I'll send you guys a link at the end of the show. I don't know what the capacity at the venue is, but, and some of the plans are still being generated. Everything's kind of come up real fast on this. So you don't have all the musical acts and it looks like they're trying to sell.
I can tell you whatever the capacity is, you're going to go over it.
I hope that would be definitely amazing. Also, I don't care how it has to happen. I'm going to try singing there because that's something I do now.
God damn. Lady Gaga? Is that what you're... Or that's Travis's thing.
And I see a little more of a Nicki pretty mean, Minaj kind of guy.
Play that. I do a pretty mean play that funky music.
God. Play that funky music, white boy.
Oh, God. That'd be awesome.
No, I kind of want Nicki Minaj now, now that you're saying it. Maybe some Lonely Island. I want you to sing I Just Had Sex by Lonely Island.
Oh, God.
That'd be great. are you going to plan on changing the name of the game at all?
No.
I'm not planning on
changing. I got this call. Yeah. Oh, that's horrible.
I mean, I've been thinking of a follow-up game. I'm not too sure how much I want to really kick the bee's nest with that one.
I should also go for it.
Probably mention.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Fire you again? I mean, they really can't, right?
No, he doesn't have to do it about that. He can just make it so like.
I really want a sequel. It'd be like, I worked for this guy every day, and just completely make fun of your boss.
Honestly, my immediate manager was awesome.
I bet he
was. I mean, he played drums in the band. Like, there's a band of coworkers who play at all the parties, and he was a drummer.
Like, the band? What band is the band?
He's actually the one who got me up on stage.
I felt like I should know who this group was, and I had no idea.
Basically, they looked at their image, and they thought it was probably negative. That's what I did. I don't, like... I'm sure everyone there is actually... I'm pretty sure your coworkers are fine. To draw another comparison, just today on Facebook, I don't know if you guys saw this, but apparently somebody posted a receipt, or a waiter at a restaurant apparently gave really good service to a customer.
Yeah, I shared that with you.
Yeah, was it you who did that?
Yep.
Yeah, it was like I gave him a $150 tip because he thought it was great service. And then somebody replied in that thing saying, well, that's the exact opposite of something else that happened today. Apparently an Applebee's employee didn't say anything about giving bad service or bad anything, just took a picture of a receipt of basically the customer's signed copy for his Visa. And it showed tip, and the person wrote in, I guess he was like a priest or a pastor.
He's a pastor,
He's a pastor and said, I give 10% to God. Why should I give you a tip?
I give God 10%. Why should I give you 18%?
Yeah,
because I can tell you from working in point of sale with the restaurant industry, standard fare if you're a party of eight or more is there's 18% gratuity automatically added to your bill to make sure that the server is compensated, which is absolutely a good thing and should happen.
I think that's fair. Yeah.
But the server has nothing to do with that, and these people are punishing the server for it, and it's absolutely stupid. Yep. But
And I can tell you that when that happens, I don't know if it's the case in the States, but when that happens in Canada, if you pay a tip normally, like it's not part of the bill, the tip is not subject to sales tax. But
if
you add the tip to the bill, like we said, with parties of eight or more, and the tip is now part of the bill, it's now subject to sales tax.
Exactly. There's tax that means they're doing it wrong.
They are. They should be putting it in afterwards.
Yeah,
but
that should be in as a service charge. So
that person from Applebee's ended up getting fired, apparently.
Posting the pastor
for posting the thing about that whole thing.
All right, that's
now this is not like,
ooh,
like
that's
this is, again coming from Facebook. It might not whatever, but that being said, it goes back to what we talked about like a while ago, where there's got to be some kind of standards, consistency. It was like whether or not it's negative or positive. It's like one guy posts a thing of a receipt being like, hey, check out this awesome tip. This awesome customer was amazing. This person, not even a comment, just puts like, here's a picture of what he wrote, gets fired. And just because it looks negative, that he's like, oh, kind of like taking a jab at the customer, that's not good. But if you put something being like, oh, this customer's awesome, that's fine. And I think that kind of is a similar line to kind of what would happen in your situation, basically. If you were being like, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, if I was higher up in one of these companies and my employees were expressing frustration with customers that had treated them poorly,
mm-hmm.
I would be standing behind my employees.
Yep.
I mean, I understand. Yep. Without customers, you have no business. But you especially don't have a business without employees, because
if your employees aren't happy, they're not making their customers happy.
Yeah, your employees are your number one customer.
Yep.
Yeah,
they're your line between you and the customer. They're what your communication is to the customer. If your employees are unhappy, you're gonna have unhappy customers. 100% of the time.
Exactly.
Definitely. And
these management tips brought to you by the David School of Management.
There you go. And it,
is
and,
that is that a backup plan centers? For you if this gaming thing doesn't work out? You're gonna
that's my next game.
Be a motivational speaker.
Tony Robbins hero.
Do it. Oh, that's be a great game. Make that, please. Please make that.
So there,
same
there's
art
one
style.
Other thing.
Same art style, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh well,
bigger
I'm
teeth.
Terrible at art, so that's
I think
all
that's
my
the
art style.
Of the charm. So yeah, so moving on from that, I guess, from moving on to that whole situation, let's talk about your game for a bit. Let's
absolutely, because I Jeff's obviously played the game. I have not yet, but I do
have.
Plan to pick it up.
I downloaded it after a little bit of difficulties yesterday. Not a totally user error, nothing to do with your website or anything
no,
like that. Just that
nobody's
okay.
surprised
stop,
by that. I just want
to
say that.
My computer decided to stop extracting and zipping files by double clicking. I have to manually right click and click it now, and I don't know when that started happening, but I couldn't do it. Anyway, but once I got it running, I played through it probably for a good while. I tried to get like as much scenario as I possibly could. So the first time I got all
that's
the way
impressive.
Through,
you must have heard a lot of you must have heard a lot of conversation over then.
I've heard a lot of it over and over because my first playthrough, I got to the point where basically the guy just hangs up and nothing gets resolved. And then after that, I'm like, I'm gonna do the quote unquote asshole run where I'm gonna be snarky and you know I'm gonna take the fucking renegade route. And I got fired
right trigger,
like the
right
second
trigger.
Reply I did. I'm like, oh, okay, so apparently it does branch more than I thought it did.
Yeah.
And then I kept going, like, I do, fired, and I kept going, but making it further and further. And
yeah.
So the game is basically that. You are an agent working at a call center, a guy's calling in to change his address, and you basically have a choice. You basically, you'll ask them a question, they'll reply, and then you have to choose your reply. Like, and that's how it branches up. So you take away from here and just go with, like, I guess, not what gave you the idea to the game, because that's obvious. You kind of just talked about that for about 40 minutes. But this is, like, your first game you've made pretty much by yourself outside of, I guess, the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
You did all
the voices. Yeah, the song at the end is it's a good buddy, Pete Masio.
Mm.
And but yeah, otherwise everything is pretty much me. I mean, it's programmed by me. I did all the art
in MS Paint, I believe.
It was an MS Paint. It is.
No, it's not MS Paint.
Oh, really?
Not. It's in GIMP with a drawing.
Oh God!
I put way more work into it than
how
MS Paint.
How did you do
I worked
that?
Hard to make it look like MS Paint. When I'm in MS Paint, man, my stuff looks even crappier because it's all like simple shapes and stuff.
Oh God! You're taking a call as a triangle if you made it in MS Paint.
And some, you know, if you look at some of my previous games, like technically I've done the art for those too. You know, my first game, Zombie Zapper, is, you know, blue circle,
mm-hmm.
avoiding green circles, drawing blue lines between them to zap them. So I mean, zero graphics.
You have to start somewhere. That's what counts.
Oh, totally. Like, I mean, you can actually really see the development of my game development. Just by looking at the visual improvement from Escape Out, from Zombie Zapper, Escape Out, Game for Anna, Josephine, Ouroboron's probably a step back, but whatever. And I can't count Apocalypse Later because that's not my graphics. That's someone else who did that.
Okay.
And, but yeah, through to I get this call every day, it's a bit of a transition.
So you started to me, looking back, because we've known each other for a while, like three of us, it probably goes back.
I'd say before you even really started the whole game dev thing, like,
yeah,
really.
To me, it really sounds like, to me, I remember being like, when you first started talking about, like, I'm going to get into game development and coding, stuff like that, it honestly seems like maybe like 6 months to a year. But realistically,
it's probably about four years ago.
Yeah, it was a few years ago. So to tell someone who's like, who's listening, who might want to get into this, from when you started teaching yourself to now, and how long did it take you to make I Get This Call Every Day?
Okay, well, so I started making games in June of 2011. Mm-hmm. And that was just, I got involved in a game jam. I sat down. I did the thing you're not supposed to do, which is use something you've never used before to make a game. Because game jams, basically, you're trying to make a game within a very limited amount of time. And
you're used to using Mario Paint, just the animated part of it.
Like I had, when I was younger, like 12, I had made a text-based math game in QBasic where, you know.
I miss QBasic.
A lot. Good times.
It
like,
was.
My parents weren't big into games, so like I made this game where you're an X-Wing. And to shoot the TIE fighters, you had to solve the math equation to target them. And
you made number munchers, is what you made.
Yeah. Now on the bright side, just good luck you didn't get sued by Lucas.
Well, if I ever put it available for sale, yeah, probably.
Well, now you're gonna get sued by Disney. Actually, it's
that's scary.
It's even worse. Woody knocking on your door.
The prosecution would like to call Mickey Mouse to the stand.
He ripped off the game. Oh,
you know, that's our intellectual property. Oh.
So anyway, you made an X-Wing killing TIE fighter thing.
So, and that, I guess technically that would be the first game that I ever made, but that was so long ago, and I didn't really follow up with game development.
Was that actually all, like, out of your head, though? Like, you completely made that from scratch yourself?
I think it was. I mean, the thing is, like,
that's
that was
impressive.
Many years ago, and previously, like, I'd had
that was
2 years
ago, dude.
When I was 12?
Like last month.
Yeah,
last month.
I'm 14.
Doing?
That's what it is.
Oh,
my wife
okay,
is a statute.
No,
right?
I remember I had a
okay,
QBasic
yeah,
book that had a couple games in it and things that you had to program yourself, like that I checked out from the library. And I programmed them, but I definitely didn't come up with them. So I was just curious if it was something you completely, the whole concept came up with from yourself, or did you start from a base from some other QBasic program, or you just kind of had a knack for it to begin with?
It was. I wish I could say I had a knack for it, because really I didn't do anything beyond then to show that I had a knack for it. But it was really kind of like the first time where, I've made all these programs by just copying out code from a book. I kind of know how to generate a random number, how to
if then
print text
go
to the screen.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, and so, it was kind of the first time I'd ever taken pieces that I had learned elsewhere and put them together into something else. And even to this day, like, I learn heavily by example. You know, you can show me documents of code and what they do, and a lot of times it's a lot of words that I'm unfamiliar with and a vocabulary that I'm not used to because I don't have a game development or even programming background. But you show me how it works in an example, and it's like, okay, I figure, you know, this does that.
It
that
becomes
this,
an English
you know,
lesson
carry the
is
one.
What it is. You're learning another language in the literal sense, not in the programming sense. You figure
very
out
much
kind
so.
Of how it's going. Sure.
You're learning a new way to communicate. In this case, you're communicating with a computer that only does the literal translation of what you do. Yeah. So you have to be very specific with it. And so, you know, I made Zombie Zapper. And that was cool. And I got exposure to, you know, some of the, who I would learn are the, you know, sort of the core of the Toronto local indie dev community. Then after that, there was, the Ludum Dare where I made Escape Out. And, that got some popularity. Like, out of 500 games submitted for that jam, it was ranked 54 in humor. And all it was a version of Breakout where, the point of the game was not to get all the blocks clear. You could clear all the blocks, but still nothing would happen. And if the ball went below the bottom of the screen, it just bounced back up. So what do you do? Yeah. Well, you can actually break the ceiling. And when you hit the paddle from behind, it boosts the paddle up. So the whole point was not to actually win the game, but actually to push the paddle all the way out of the play area, thus escaping. Hence escaping. Hmm. So, I mean, it was one of those games where it was like once people got it, it was this neat like, oh, okay, I get it moment. And of course, you wouldn't really want to play it more after that. But that moment seemed to be funny to people, so it got ranked really high for humor. So good on that one. And, you know, then I submitted that to something called the IGF Pirate Cart, which was this massive collection. Yeah. That name comes from days when you could go to like a shady, like electronic store, like old school Radio Shack, and there'd be like the 3.5-inch floppies, you know, in the plastic wrap that would say 2000 games, and you'd get them home, and it's like,
oh God, I remember
2000 copies of the same game.
Yes. Stuff came on these little tiny discs.
1.44 megabytes would hold how many
games?
We won't
even try to explain floppy disks. That would just blow their minds.
Oh, yeah. Let's go to the big ass hard files that are the size of your head that only hold about, 16 kilobytes.
So, there was some controversy with the IGF that year. It was the 2012 IGF. And some people kind of came from a place of $99 is a lot to submit a game, and I've made something, but I don't think it's IGF worthy, but there's a lot of us. So they decided, hey, let's get all of these games together. We'll submit it as a single entry. And so they put out an open call and they threw Escape Out in that pack, and it all got submitted to the IGF for consideration for the Independent Games Festival Awards. And of course, good luck getting judges to look at a collection of 300 games for any serious award consideration. Yeah. But I mean,
you're number what, 179? Oh yeah, we didn't really see that one. Sorry,
it's 300 small games, but I think the total download is somewhere in the vicinity of a few gigabytes. So it's a lot of stuff in there. It's pretty fun.
I'm guessing your game's really really small. Megs at most, probably.
Not even. I mean, it doesn't even have graphics, and I don't even think I put sound in for that particular build. So it was pretty minuscule, but I mean, it is Flash, so I mean, it does have some memory in there. But you know, then after that, they were doing a follow up because the IGF Pirate Cart, you know, was still part of the IGF. They were showing it at GDC, you know, Game Developers Conference, and they wanted a new cart to go and display on the GDC floor. So I made a couple games for that, and one of them happened to be a game that I made for my wife for Valentine's Day called A Game for Anna. And and you know, that got to the GDC cart, but more importantly, Anna loved it. So that was awesome. And then Toe Jam came around, and you're probably going like, okay, why are you telling us about your feet, right?
Or I was hoping you were making Toe Jam in Earl.
Yep.
yeah, I forgot about that. Toe Jam is the Toronto Game Jam. It happens every May. Toe Jam is where a lot of good games happen. Basically,
Toronto
community in Toronto. Yeah.
Make
jam,
well.
You know, put a whole bunch of developers into a jam and a jar, you know, preserves, that sort of thing. Actually, it's kind of like going into a jar because, you know, put 450 mostly dudes, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, cram them into like basically what amounts to, two large computer labs and a large open room for a weekend to all make games and try to stay clean. It's an interesting experience. It's quite crowded. And myself
sure
and a but it, no, it was probably better.
Does it smell anything like AnimeCon or yeah? Oh my god! Internet.
Any conventions other than Fan Expo? I haven't really been to conventions. I need to get out more.
I haven't either. I wouldn't even consider that a convention. Really, it's more of like a. It's a get together for Retroids and VGable people for the most part. And I mean, and then there's the whole rest of the show that goes on that is kind of cool, but it's not really a show. It's more of like a flea market, really.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
It can be. You know, some of the panels are fun, if I remember. We're talking about Fan Expo, right?
Yep, there are some. Yeah. You go to any of that? You went to Fan Expo. I met you there. Was it last year? I didn't go this year. Or last year, I should say. The year before.
Yeah, I went last year. It was interesting. My wife got to geek out over Ben Browder. Ben Browder? No, not Ben Browder. Guy who played Captain Jack Harkness on Torchwood and Doctor Who.
2 seconds. I happen to have a Chrome window open.
There's an app for
you
that.
You continue. Talk amongst yourselves.
She's trying to shout the name at me too, but I can't hear her because I got.
So your wife's going crazy over some dude at the convention.
John Barrowman.
There you go, John Barrowman. Sexy man.
Who's gay, by the way.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Like I said, just a good-looking guy. And,
real nice eyebrows on that one.
I really love this guy. He's so sexy. Dave, we gotta go see. No, I don't believe that. I don't think we should see him. I think that's not a good idea. But he's gay. Oh, no, that's totally fine. Yeah, go.
Smack his ass. Have fun.
I'll go up by myself. You hang out with him for a bit. I'm going to, you know, check out, do my own thing for a bit.
So, some of the
man defies age,
weird.
Too.
Oh, like, I had a weird moment in the Trios College, had a panel, and gaming schools are weird things. Like, I had actually looked at Trios for a while when I was interested in possibly going to school to learn some development, and they wanted, like, 37 grand for 2 years. And, I asked them a question, and they didn't know any of the Toronto gaming community, even though they're a gaming school, which
are you
sounded
serious?
Really,
so they never had one person graduate from them and be like, hey...
I'm
not saying they're a bad school, but I mean, like, you'd figure they'd have some knowledge about what's going on locally, especially when they're a
especially for a school with an internship program.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. But the guys from EP Daily, Reviews on the Run, Victor Lucas, Scott Jones, they've always had a big presence at Fan Expo. And they did one panel on classic PC gaming. And so apparently... like, I was the only person in the room who knew that Tim Schafer was the original creative designer on Full Throttle. Like, I don't understand how this isn't, like, more as common knowledge as, you know, George Washington, first president.
Who was doing this panel? Was it EP Daily, like those guys?
No, the panel knew. The panel was asking these questions of the audience. And
that's what I mean, but who was the panel, though?
Oh, so it was Victor Lucas, Scott Jones, and the third guy whose name I unfortunately forget, who runs... the Classic Gaming Museum out in Malton.
Okay, yeah.
And so I actually won a copy of the LucasArts Archives Volume 3. This is back from when LucasArts was good at making games and actually would publish, like, these big boxes that contain, like, 6 CDs. They're like, you open the box and the CDs are just displayed there lovingly. Like, look at these wonderful platters.
Like platters of gaming. Like Monkey Island, shit like that.
Hold on. So this, I think, was the last one that they did. And so this one, this one contains Monkey Island Madness, which is
the episodic one?
No. This is well before Telltale got their hands on Monkey Island. Okay. This is full versions of The Secret of Monkey Island and Monkey Island 2 LeChuck's Revenge. And we're not talking HD remix version.
Not the HD one, the original one.
Yeah. Not Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo Monkey Island.
Yeah.
It's got the original Dark Forces. It's got Full Throttle, of course. It's got The Dig, which was
that's going back. That's one of their newer, but going back a bit.
Yeah, it's still. I mean, it's but some of their slightly lesser known adventure categories. Mm. And then tell me if you've heard of this one, Afterlife.
It does not ring a bell.
So Afterlife is a SimCity style game in which you manage both heaven and hell.
Okay.
And so, like, you build, like,
keep it in balance, or?
You've got to, like, keep the happy angels happy in hell, and you've got to punish all the bad people, or, you know what I mean? The other way around, sorry.
You
got to keep the people in paradise happy, and you got to keep the people in hell punished. And you do that by building structures and raising taxes and stuff. I don't know. And then, you know, the usual sample disc that has demos of what have you, including Yoda Stories, one of my favorite games from the 1990s.
Yeah, I don't really know.
Yoda Stories is almost like a little applet type game. It came out around the time like Windows 95 had just launched.
So we're talking about like 94, 95-ish?
Thereabouts, yeah. And so it's almost a bit like a roguelike in that you have like this little character, they move on a grid, you know, there's other enemies that sort of move around them. And it advertised itself as having like so many thousand different adventures, because what would happen is plot wise, the game took place between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, but the plot was inconsequential. You'd go see Yoda. Yoda would give you some BS mission in text that did not sound at all like Yoda. Like it was proper English.
Okay.
And then you would fly off to that planet and it would be like, retrieve the dilithium gem. And it's like, okay. And so, you know, you'd go into a place and the guy would say, I know where the dilithium gen is, but I won't tell you until you, you know, kill 3 quill boars and bring me their pristine tusks. And then you do that and he'd be like, great. And I don't know where it is. So go talk to Jim in the next town type thing. So it was like these very basic like RPG adventures. And, you know, you find the quest, you get the items and you finish the quest and go and show Yoda that you did good. But everything was randomly generated. Like the story always had the same sort of hooks and there was maybe about 20 different stories. But the maps themselves would totally randomize every time you played. So that was like, you know, 10,000 variety of games. And I don't know why this became a really addictive thing for me when I was young, but I played the crap out of that game.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that, actually. And that's back in the day when I probably played a lot of those, like LucasArts and all that kind of stuff. Then again, I didn't play a lot of Dark Forces either, so.
Yeah, same here. LucasArts had their hand in a lot of things back then, and shame on them for letting that all die.
Well, they might be cut. Well,
Where? We went on a huge tangent there.
We did go on a humongous huge tangent, but that's all right. I was going to say, we usually do a distractions thing, which originally, like, I was like, we'll get that out of the way because it's traditional, but we can throw that in now or do it later. But that's the kind of thing. You know, it's a throwback. You played a lot of this back in the day.
And, yeah.
You won this thing for answering a question that I'm really surprised that no one else knew in that entire room.
Yeah. Tim Schafer, clearly full throttle. Yeah. Like, what else? I don't know. People these days.
I guess back on topic after that. So you went to that thing. This is what year is this now? So you went to, is this 2010?
Oh, no, we're in 2012 now.
Okay.
Yeah. Toe Jam. So, myself and a journalist who had never made games before and a pixel artist who was kind of working with us and another team, we all came together. The theme of the jam was, the world's not ending. And so we made Apocalypse Later, this, point and click adventure game. And here's where the connection to Yoda stories comes back. The whole graphical style and method of interaction is totally inspired by Yoda stories. I wanted to make a game like it.
Like, okay.
But instead of being like totally randomized, this is just a singular adventure. You play as this little kid who is apparently a demon in hell. And he's tasked with completing seven assignments that need to be done in order to destroy the world. You know, like, one of them is he's got to make fire and brimstone. So he collects a rock and he finds sulfur in his house and he puts it all in the oven, but he accidentally, dumps pseudoephedrine in it as well. And so instead of making fire and brimstone, he accidentally cooks meth.
Okay. That's awesome.
Or he,
not saying meth is awesome. He wants to create meth's awesome.
Or he wants to, create a virus to destroy the world. So of course he will create a computer virus and he goes through a sequence of events and he's got a computer virus, but viruses kill people, not computers. So of course he's not going to send it over the internet. What does he do? He tries to put it in his fish tank to send it through the water. And he keeps screwing up basically all of these things, to end the world. And in the end, he just says whatever to it all because he's lazy and just goes back to bed. And that's the game. It's just he's got all these tasks that he needs to complete,
like,
and you can go to bed right away if you want. At any point in the game, you can just go back to bed. The game ends.
Game over.
But he's just a lazy little boy who is supposed to bring about the end of the world and never does.
This is actually pretty funny. I'm getting a little bit of a, I guess, a pattern here.
Yeah.
It's like you base a game. You can just go to bed if you want to. Yeah. Fuck these tasks and go to bed, and then. I'm guessing this leads into I get this call every day.
Yeah, because that was the next game. It I had a bit of a drought. Like, I didn't really work on much. I discovered Twine, which was an interactive fiction tool, and I did a couple things in that. But nothing really significant. Like, the biggest thing is just actually a Twine game that actually takes you through the story of how I started developing games. And through doing that, you actually unlock all the games that I made at the points when I would have made them. And then I found a choose your own adventure I did when I was 10 years old, and I put that into Twine as well.
Jesus.
And, yeah, there's one choice. And one of them is the resolution is one sentence long. It's great.
How old did you say you were?
10 years old.
There you go. That's a step, dude.
So,
I couldn't even draw a fucking circle on QBasic, so.
So it, then we get to September of 2012, and the Let 'Em Dare does these mini Let 'Em Dare challenges between the normal quarterly events, and they did this what they call a no game challenge, make a game that's not actually a game. So I came up with this idea of, hey, what about a game where it, you know, it's like a point and click adventure, except it's a really boring topic, and you know, I know a topic that's boring and frustrating. One at my day job, and that's where it came out of. So the first thing I actually did for that was the art. You know, usually I dive right into the programming and make the game work first, but instead for this one, I was like, okay, let's draw this out. Let's see what this looks like. And
started doing the guy's face. I saw your first picture. You tweeted, you're like, hey, here's the first asset from my next game, and I was just like, I was like, wow, that's fucking god awful. At the same time, I was like, that's fucking awesome. That was like a long time ago. I was like, well, I don't know. I don't think it took you, what, 6 months to do that?
No, well, it started in September, right? So okay. That's going on 5 now, I guess.
Yeah, 5 yeah, now. But you finished it before 2013. You finished it in December, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't official. That's when it officially went live.
The game launched. The game launched on December 21st. I think mm-hmm. I had everything together probably by late November, because there was a period where the game was fundamentally done, and I had reached out to some people for feedback. So, you know, there was a copy of the game out there in some people's hands. They played it, and you know, they came back with a lot of feedback, and surprisingly, I didn't incorporate a lot of it. Part of me does wish I had. I had one person actually really tell me, look, you can't release it with this art. You know, you need an artist. There's you just can't put it out looking like this and expecting it to do anything. Probably true, to be honest.
Well, I mean, do you think like a good art? Like, I mean, I think it works well with the subject matter. The fact that what you're doing and what you're putting out there to the people, I don't think it needed a crazy art style. I think that, if anything, would have got people. Again, this is kind of not in a vacuum, but it's looking at a very small percentage of people that would look around for like indie games. But if that was getting any kind of hype, like if anyone like. Maybe I'll admit, at first if I saw that on some site, I'd be like, I'm probably not going to check this out. If I didn't read the description of what it was, because obviously relating to it by working in a call center, I'd want to check it out. But seeing the art style, no. But when it's getting kind of word of mouth and seeing that, it becomes kind of like, it's kind of like not an in thing, it's kind of like it's different.
Mm.
And people will want to try it if there's some positivity behind it, which I think it's getting right now. So I kind of agree with you and saying, like, if it had... I guess if you had an artist at the onset, like from the very beginning, it might have gotten more attention. But I think the way that that you kept it, your original art that you just drew up yourself, I think that's probably better in the long run for it now that it's getting good word of mouth. Well, it's getting spread around. I think it adds charm to it, I guess we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
And I think it was like an actual serious like picture of like a super detailed dude on a phone, a little picture-in-picture thing of like who you're talking to. I think it would lose a little bit of it.
Yeah, well, it gives it that personally. Like strong bad feel, you know, like from the Teen Girl Squad kind of thing, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
I was wondering how to change my address form and my tax returns.
I think it was a good idea to keep it, but I mean, I can see somebody telling you like, oh man. Because it is, let's be honest, it's atrocious, but it's charming. Yeah. It's, no, it really, like, I'm
it's David, part of the game. It's David part of what makes the game sure. good, but it's horrible.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not going to be like it looks like something I would draw, and I am not an artist at all. I'm right there with you. I've tried to draw stuff on MS Paint. It just looks like I am the worst at Pictionary. Like, I cannot draw what I'm actually trying to draw. I have to play it like charades. I have to draw like sounds like, but draw something ridiculous and be like, yep. Put it together. I cannot draw the actual thing. Like, draw a guy playing basketball. I ain't gonna draw a guy playing basketball. I'm gonna draw a fucking basket and a ball. That's what's gonna happen.
I can draw a basketball and a guy, but I can't draw a guy playing basketball.
Exactly.
It's a guy. It's a stick finger with a little stick between the legs.
Yep.
That's my guy. Yep.
I see what you did there.
Very nice. Good job. Well played, sir.
Cool. So anyway, go on.
So, you know, the game came together. I think the hardest part was actually doing all the audio. That was the most tedious
250 part. Lines of dialogue, I believe.
Yeah. And like, I really like, I got it all done for the pre-release copy, and I kept thinking, oh yeah, no, I'll just, you know, go back through this, do a second pass, really clean everything up. And just the amount of work that it took to get all of it in there. I mean, I've actually had people say, oh, only 250. And
what? Come on.
That's the internet for you, though, dude.
That is. It really is. Like, well, Mass Effect has 50,000. Yeah, Mass Effect also has 100 people working on it.
Because you're BioWare. Just,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
For people
who
are
in Canada,
concerned.
It's the same thing, right?
You are in Canada,
Jesus.
Everyone knows everyone has infinite time and resources for everything.
Oh, definitely. You just got a money tree right there in your, you know, your place of living, and you just pull it down there and be like, hey, I got all the time in the world. Well, now you might, but before that, you're like, hey... You know,
I'm gonna get the guy who played Nathan Drake and have him do the dialogue for my game real quick.
Hey, Nolan North, come on over here. You're gonna be caller number three. We're gonna expand on this.
You're going to say that you need to change your address because there are some guys who are looking to hunt you down and kill you because you stole their treasure. I just need you to say that on the microphone real quick, please. Thank you.
What's my voter mission?
So you finish up the game. So
yeah, so I finish it up and. And so, around the time when I'm getting feedback, like, I'd gotten it done and I'm starting to question the wisdom of what to do with it. There was a time when I was planning to put it on a truly pay what you want, so you could basically potentially get the game for $0. But the more time that I put into it, the more I realized that, you know, if I don't step in and say what value I think the work that I've done has, you know, if I don't recognize that I've done work that has value, then, you know, no one may. So.
Right.
You know, it was around that time that I decided, okay, let's do this with a minimum price on it. And, you know, like the logistics of everything took a while, you know, getting everything set up. Like I didn't have a finished website, so I had to make sure I had that in place. And then the things went a little dark for a while. You know, I got depressed. I started toying with the idea of even just throwing it out there for free and just getting it done with. And, at some point I just turned around and was like, no, let's do this. Let's rock this. Let's get this out. Let's put this for sale. And, it happened to be like, a week before December 21st. And so I guess partly with a little bit of irony, you know, it was the end of the world hype had really been building around that time. And I didn't mean to try and cash in on it, but I'm just like, fine, guys, I get this call every day comes out December 21st. Have at thee. And, then began the process of emailing the press, which was nerve wracking. Cause man, talking to press when you aren't even sure if they're not just going to email you back and say, never contact me again, you chud. it's a weird feeling. And like I did my best to just be as non-professional and yet professional about it as possible. You know, like every email I did for the writer, you know, I made sure I'm sending it to people who might actually be interested in games like this. And it was a lot that I didn't really hear back from. And there were some who really did connect with it. I was very fortunate that, Kevin Van Oort expressed, interest in the game, you know, from the time that I sent it to him. And, like he's,
and that is for someone who's not.
Oh, Kevin Van Oort is, I'll be honest, I'm unclear of his actual position, but I know that he is a writer and editor at GameSpot.
At where? Sorry, you cut out there for a second.
Oh, sorry, he's a writer and editor at GameSpot.
Okay.
So that's a pretty big deal, because I mean, I think it, in no small part to him, the game's been covered twice on GameSpot, which has definitely been pretty significant. I mean, before everything that's happened now has happened, I mean, those points of coverage, you know, there was the Kotaku article, there was the, you know, the two articles on GameSpot that have really.
I guess Polygon covered it. A lot of
well,
the
Polygon actually,
Giant
Polygon
Bomb,
didn't,
I think, might have.
Polygon didn't, and Giant Bomb didn't really cover it until this whole situation broke. Although,
that's
like
true.
I did put the game up on the Giant Bomb database, and, you know, December 21st, from that point forward, wasn't a really strong release time frame. So, my game, like Giant Bomb's website has like that sidebar of new releases, and I get this call every day ended up in that sidebar for like 2 weeks straight. And that was, I mean, I don't know if that coverage led to any sales, but you know, just like,
yeah, you never know.
I'm a huge duder. I love Giant Bomb.
They're great. Great. I'm surprised. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I haven't listened to it. It'll probably be on like the next show. I'm sure Patrick will be all over that news. Cause it, like I said, you could turn on it. Or look at any kind of media outlet regarding games and not see this story. So,
yeah, I mean, Patrick, I've already spoken to Patrick Klepek. An article actually just went up earlier tonight. where and he's done the best coverage so far. He actually tried to get back in contact with the Star reporter for her comment. And,
oh wow!
Klepek knows his crap, man. Like he's
one of the best guys. He's the closest I would say to being a game journalist actually in the industry. Like he actually goes out there and he fishes out like the facts and puts everything in context. Like even what? The big fighting game controversy back in the day with the whole Street Fighter Cross Tekken. Can't what they called it before the game came out, and there's a whole thing about the guy not sexually assaulting.
Oh, cross the assault. Female.
Yeah, it was the whole, like, yeah, the kind of harassment charge, the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone was being like, oh my God, the fighting game, he was terrible, all this other crap, and he actually went and did research and put it into context and then did an article and spoke about it on the podcast and let people know actually what happened. And yeah.
It'll
he
be
does
surreal.
His due diligence, let's put it that way.
Definitely.
He doesn't just read something and then embellish on it.
Oh, no. He's good people. And, he was one of the people who I reached out to from the very beginning. I really thought that I Get This Call Every Day would be the kind of game he appreciated. And I didn't really hear back from him initially. So, like, I felt that was my first big failure with the game is that, like, I couldn't get through to Klepek. And, I've talked to him since and he's covered the story. So,
good.
I'm happy. But, if I get talked about on the Bombcast, man, that'll be the most surreal thing ever.
That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, Dave, we're running a little bit short on time here, but I do want to get to just a couple more things. Where, first of all, where can people get your game, first of all, and make the donation to purchase it? And I will say, as a, I'm not sure if this is because I work in a call center, playing your game, I actually did find it humorous, even though I think some of it was meant to be humorous, but just being able to relate to it, I actually did laugh out loud quite a few times. The OMG reply to one of the things literally had me laughing really loud because we've all been there who's been in that situation. And the fact that I got to actually, like, I never actually said that to somebody and just hear that, in audible form to someone, I lost it. I was like, that is so perfect for that situation. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And I think people should at least experience this because it is funny if you ever, like, worked in a call center, called a call center, anything along these lines. It is legitimately funny, I thought, anyway. And where can they get their hands on this if they want to download it?
So the main place is directly on my website, davidsgallant.com. There is a page set up for it. It's pretty easy to find. Once you're on that page, just go down to my arcade section. All my games are there, and I Get This Call Every Day as the big green button. You can buy it from that site. It's also available on Desura and Indievania. So those are just straight $2. They're not pay what you want because couldn't quite get the support for that type of payment model there. But hey, it's available for other places if that's where you buy your games. And so it's not available on Steam yet. We'll see if that ever works.
I was just going to talk about that right now.
Got to get that green light.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I did put the game up on Steam Greenlight, which, I mean, if I thought the game wouldn't really appeal to anyone in terms of sales, I mean, I don't even know what I was thinking when I put it up on Greenlight. It's been a huge... If you ever want to get the thickest skin possible for people being negative about your work, put a game on Greenlight.
That was going to be another question, was how are you doing with moderating comments on articles, what's happening, as well as Greenlight and all that kind of stuff? Are you taking that, like, in stride? Are you kind of looking at it being like, okay, I would say constructive criticism, but a lot to do with the internet, that's bullshit, and it's just people being people.
Yeah, but, I mean, a lot of it, I wish I could account for a lot of where it comes from. I mean, there's some wild ones out there. Mm-hmm. Greenlight has taken a huge swing for the positive because it's pretty much dominated now by people upvoting the game to support me, you know, support the fact that, you know, I'm out of a job and that. So it didn't always used to be that way. I mean, a lot of the negative feedback focused on, the ugliness of the experience. There's a lot of people who accused it of being a Flash game. Yes, it is it's made in Flash. Great. You know, so
it go in the sun fucking is going to fucking rise tomorrow. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And also I hope you're enjoying VVVVV and Machinarium.
Yeah, which are all the same shit.
Other great Flash games that are available on Steam. So One of the ways I coped with it was just by tweeting it, you know, by putting these comments out into the public. It, you know, but they can hurt sometimes. And like in the beginning, I tried experimenting with Reddit and got some negative feedback and I didn't do well with it. It really affected me. And I really realized I got to get over this. I mean, that kind of feedback is just going to
keep coming. You got to laugh at it. You know,
you do.
That's all you can do.
Even if people, you have that tendency sometimes to just see what some people are saying and know that it's flat out wrong.
You don't want to defend it, obviously. It's human nature.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like getting rid of that instinct is it's definitely helped, you know. It is tough because you want it. It's your baby. You want to defend it. But at the same time, you got to realize like it's not worth it. It's not going to be productive to do it. People are going to have their opinions. You could scream to the high heavens. You could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt their opinion is wrong. And people still, you know, be that way. So it's helped, you know, like it's something that I just, you know, I can deal with it. You know, I could just look at, nod my head and say, okay, exactly. Good for you.
Worst comes to worst, you got to be somebody took the effort to actually type something out in regards to something I created.
Yeah.
That's something good, whether it's a negative comment or not. There's a lot of shit I read every day that unless it really, really bugs me or I really, really like it, I'm going to comment on it. Either one of those, it's still getting attention.
So. That's a good way to put it.
Cool. So you can check that out on Greenlight on Steam. If people want to vote for that, they can just go for steam.com and go into the Steam thing, and it's on the Greenlight, I guess.
Yeah, it's under the Greenlight. Again,
do they have to search for it, or is it going to be like under a kind of
It's under I Get This Call Every Day. It's it should be easy to find. I mean, it's probably most people Steam Greenlight queues by now. Mm-hmm. Unless you're a freak like me and just vote yes to everything on Greenlight.
there you go. Well, that's not a bad.
Give them all a chance, damn it.
It's a good way to get in good indie games out there.
Don't get me wrong. There are bad games on Greenlight, and mm-hmm. and I don't mean that to put down the creators of those games. I mean Bone Town is on Greenlight. I don't know what Bone Town is. As my understanding is that it's a graphic adventure in the Leisure Suit Larry style, but also features like explicit sex with cartoons. So hey, great. Yeah,
there's right also a game right. There's a game right now on Greenlight called Hit That.
Well, we could have a whole podcast just on the fun stuff you find on Greenlight. But I mean, like, honestly,
let's make that. Let's do the Greenlight podcast.
That's not a bad idea, actually. But like, why not just put them all in Steam and let the market decide it? You know, like just
I think the reason why is because I think they want to actually highlight stuff.
That's a good point.
Throw too much shit on somewhere, people are just gonna get confused and overwhelmed. They're not gonna know what to think. I think if they actually get approved on something like Greenlight, it's like this has been voted by people. This is something that I should probably check out, whether it's bad or not. So
don't get me wrong. I mean, look at the old way Valve used to approve games, and you know, people used to take that as an assurance of quality, and that wasn't always the case. You know, we got the War Z out of that, and some other nice crapware, but whatever. That's besides the point.
Yeah, neither here nor there. Neither here nor there. God damn it!
There it is, folks. There's the phrase you can say.
Oh wow!
Can Jeff please record the audio for your next game?
I think if I include voice work, I'm going to start working with more people. I was super worried about having to work with voice actors. It's why I did all the voices
myself.
Listen,
if you ever want voiceover work, you call us up.
Yeah, there you go.
I would be more than willing. As irritating as my voice is, I'd be more than willing to help you out with that.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Damn right. I can guarantee
you. I
honestly
didn't know you're the actual caller on that was your voice.
Yeah, I pitched it up to, like, I mean, I did some audio work on it. Like, it's not just me, like, putting on an accent or anything like that. I don't do accents that well. But just a little bit of editing so that it still sounds like a human voice, but doesn't quite sound the same as the caller. I'm surprised people can tell. People think that it's a different person so much.
Yeah, like it doesn't sound like you at all.
Wow, that's at awesome. All. Perfect. Yeah. That mission accomplished.
All right, so you can download that game at davidsgallant.com. Gallant, sorry, I said Gallant. Damn it, I apologize.
Oh no,
davidsgallant.com.
It's all right, man.
It's because I do. I can't even say that because then I'll probably get fired from my job. So, check it out. Definitely donate. Try to go to his website directly if you can. If you prefer your other ways of going, where he said his game was listed at, go there.
Yeah, like I don't.
For those guys who are listening on Retro Rising VGA, we posted a forum thread up on there with a direct link to his website. You can check that out if you're frequently visiting that website. Check it out. And Glenn, do you have any other questions?
Vote him up on Greenlight. Yeah, I just voted him up on Greenlight myself just this very second, and all of you should do the same, please.
Thank you, Glenn.
I appreciate it.
And David, anything else you want to say before we call it? I mean, I'm glad to see people. It's totally done like a 180 in terms of attitude with, I'm guessing, your peers and maybe yourself. It went from like a, oh my God, this is bullshit kind of thing to, this is probably a really good thing that happened.
Yeah.
Whether or not you agree with what happened, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You got nothing but better things to look forward to at this point. I honestly, this has opened the door to you to do what you want to do.
It really does seem that way. I mean, I left that job worrying for my future, and while I can't say that I know I can go fully into full time game development, this is a huge step in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And
yeah.
and my immense gratitude and overwhelming thanks for this. I mean, the only negative thing in my head right now is just the nervousness over what do I do next?
Yeah. And that is my one question is, will there be a sequel?
I don't know if there'd be a sequel. I've been toying with the idea of doing a companion game, but the subject matter I was looking at was a lot emotionally heavier than I get this call every day. It would actually be a much sadder situation that you'd be dealing with. That also came out of that job. That wasn't one I got every day, but you know, it's like every few months a call.
I get
like
this
that
call occasionally. That would be a good one.
Yeah.
So a good
sequel from I get this call every day would be I get this call occasionally.
Heard a rumor that you're going to be working on Halo 5, but I could.
Yeah.
If you want to confirm or deny that right now, that's
Darksiders 3. Are you on this?
There's a dream. I mean, Capybara Games are in the city. Like, I would love to work with those guys. I just, because I'm so self-taught, like, I do not have the skill set appropriate to work in a major studio, right? So,
it looks like people have reached out and they're willing to teach you and bring you under their wing, so to speak. So, they obviously got you for not only did you do something that came from your heart and you're just being honest with, it shows creativity. And that, yep. I think that's the most important thing with any game designer and like that anywhere. And this is like, me being honest, you can code the fuck out of anything.
Yep.
But if you're not creative, if you're not like,
you can teach code, but you can't teach how to make a game.
Exactly.
If that makes any sense.
And I think that it's for being like your first complete game they actually put on sale. And I remember the night when you were like, shit, my game's going live in like fucking half an hour. I'm so nervous. Holy shit. Like counting like every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes. That says something. And I think the fact that you did that in such a short period of time, I think it's going to be nothing but. You're going up for yourself. It's not going to go down. I think this is like
awesome.
If you've done this well, self-taught, it's kind of endless how well you could do with any sort of tutorship or if somebody took you under their wing and really just kind of helped you out with any of this. You know, this is just what you've done completely on your own. And if anybody who knows the ropes were to pick you up and help you out with any of this, I think it's kind of boundless what you could be a part of. So I'm really hopeful. That awesome. This turns out to be an overwhelming positive for you, where you get to really pursue something that you truly love. So here's
kudos.
Hoping from me at least.
Yep, from everyone. I think from everyone you've talked to, all the backing you've gotten.
So
that being said, dude, best of luck to you. Of course, we're keeping you in touch. You live about like 25 minutes away from where I live. We have to go for beer sometime. It's been a while. Yeah.
Oh,
but, don't forget about the
absolutely.
Little people.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, I know the show that's happening soon. Maybe you should come out.
Yeah, dude, I would fucking love to. I won't know what the fuck's going on, but I'll go.
As far as I know, it's just going to be music and a bunch of people who like video games. So
that sounds like my kind of thing. I'll drive up. I'll take a bus.
Cool. So
get
I guess
up here, Glenn.
That's going to wrap up this like special episode. Again, I know it's not as like a crazy lighthearted stuff we usually do, but I think it's important that we did this.
Absolutely.
And if people want to hit you up, I know on Twitters, that's where you do a lot of your communication. You are David S. Gallant on Twitter. I believe.
Yes.
You
yes.
almost said it again, didn't you? You almost said the line.
I almost did. I had to think about it. I'll tell you why I keep saying that when we're off the air. But then we got 9
yeah,
kilobytes.
Twitter's probably the best way to get a hold of me. My inbox is just slammed with emails.
Oh,
at the moment.
I can believe it. I can believe it.
Which is good. Which is great.
Yep. Glenn is 9 kilobytes, and I am Indus Jeff.
Yeah, don't worry about us, though. We're schmucks. Tweet at this guy. CBC. He's going places.
But seriously, Dave, I know we've known you for a while, but I really appreciate you taking out the time to give us a little interview like this and some insight to what's been going on for the last couple days of your life. And I really do appreciate it, for real.
Thank you. I'm glad you guys had me on.
And I know Glenn actually said, he's like, when I told him, like, hey, I'm going to get some kind of interview going with Dave, it's just figure out what's going on. He was like, hey, dude, I want in on that right away. So,
Yep.
Thank you, Glenn.
I'm more stoked for you than I really could say, honestly, because it's really cool to see somebody that I know have this kind of thing happen for them, you know, in a good light. Screw all the controversy bullshit that everybody wants to spin on everything else. I'm very excited for you.
Nothing but positives, really, to be honest.
that's awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Glenn. Honestly,
fuck all the haters. You're
helping me raise money for. Sorry, Glenn. When you were helping me raise money for Kid Masturbator, did you ever imagine it would ever go this far?
I never knew Kid Masturbator would go quite this far. But I am.
It's a good thing that wasn't your fucking Twitter name.
Extremely glad that it did, and I really wish it was still your Twitter name.
It would be pretty funny. Local game
that
would have
made the whole job
Kid
thing
Masturbator.
That much more severe.
It would have been such a different twist on it. Like you definitely would have gotten fired for completely
you'd be
different
reasons.
You'd be
the guy in your parents' basement, some shit.
You wouldn't have been fired for the game. You would have been fired for the same reason Sandusky was from Penn State.
All right. What could have been, eh?
All right, guys, let's wrap this up. We did all the whole things,
yep,
the finishing touches and stuff. We'll release this for those listening. We're going to release our Game of the Year episode, which we're going to have Dave on for, but then we realized there's like 5 of us doing that. It's going to be forever, so we wanted to do this as a special. So
probably hear this after the fact.
Yeah, there's no point in saying when this is going to release, because it's going to release after that point, and you're already going to have this. So
you already know. It's in your hands.
In your ears. All right.
So for Indus, we out. And something, 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 Travis, or not Travis, Glenn, say bye.
Bye.
All right, Dave, just give your website one more time. And
DavidEscalon.com. Peace out.
Take it easy, guys.
Play your games and play his games, and we'll see you next week.
Seriously, play his game. It's funny. Do it. Good night.
See ya.